Welcome back to the podcast, where we upload episodes more frequently than Detroit City score goals. That is correct. We're back with the USOA. We are officially about 5 to 6 days out from the season opener. And of course, we are back with Noah as well, our mainstay here.
But, you know, it's always good to get one out when we can, if we delayed it a day. So, you know, and then on that note of uploading more episodes than Detroit City FC score goals, we've also uploaded more episodes frequently than Monterey Bay FC have scored off of corner kicks. So and quite more than Monterey Bay FC have scored off of corner kicks, because they didn't record a single corner kick goal last season, which is kind of hilarious. I didn't know that. I should have known that, being one of the biggest Monterey Bay FC fan pages. But yeah, there you go. The more you know.
Yeah, well, now you have a towering presence in Luther Archimedes up top. Hopefully that changes. But yeah, we're back this week. We're mainly just going to hit on the rest of the games that we didn't get to last week. That's our big thing. But we do have a big announcement, or a couple, to start with. First off, I posted recently of a new series starting this summer, Summer of USL League 2. I'll be going through with Noah on some occasions, of course. USL League 2 teams will be sitting down with players, coaches from them, and just going through USL League 2 and lower division soccer, pretty much like getting to that semi-pro area of soccer in the United States. And we have more episodes planned for midweek. This week we'll have a midweek episode probably around Thursday or Friday for you guys. And I'll put out on the socials what they all are, just for a more comprehensive look as to what they'll be. But I do have four series, I should say, planned starting soon regarding midweek episodes, on top of the weekly episodes that you guys already get. So that will be huge. But we'll jump right into the games here. That's what we're here for. 1 week out, that is what we all want. So we are going to start with Memphis, Las Vegas. Memphis are really coming off of another great season. First season under Stephen Glass. A lot of experimentation there. And it seems like he did carry over a lot of Pyramid's tactics and look in terms of formation and what he wanted his players to do. So that was mightily impressive. I think the moves that they made this offseason also complement them well in terms of how they want to move forward. Of course, they did lose a lot of pieces, like Aaron Malloy. We always go back to him. He's the biggest loss that they've had this offseason. So where they get that creative touch for midfield will be interesting to see. And then you take a look at Las Vegas, who are still rounding out their roster. At the time of recording this, they just signed Hayden Sargis on loan from DC United. Still 21 years of age, going to anchor that back line really well. But they're still, I would say, in like their teething stage, where they still need a lot more pieces. And the roster that they can put on the field is, I would say, pretty bare bones still. They still have a couple more positions that they need before it feels like a real roster, especially that starting 11. But Las Vegas really intrigued me in this game, especially because of how poorly Memphis started last season against Loudoun United as well.
Yeah, and I'd say on the note of Memphis, I did have them, like, I think it was ninth in my power rankings when I did it. They've moved up for sure in terms of the recent outgoings that Tulsa have had. The fact that I just have us in eighth, because I think we can make the playoffs. I'm not going to back us, right? But I think in terms of what Memphis are doing, I think, yes, they have a very underrated roster. But I think what's going to be an underrated factor during this season for them is going to be that switch to the Western Conference. There's going to be so much traveling for them. especially because they're going to have to go out to California four times, right? Which is just honestly brutal. That is really brutal because it's essentially the East Coast, Memphis. It's I think it's just they are technically landlocked, I believe, but only one state separates them from them in the Atlantic Ocean. So, you know, really it's going to be an interesting season for them, and that medical staff is going to be, you know, it's gonna, they're going to have to be on top of things there. And I think for Las Vegas, I think he just, you know, hit on it perfectly. It's they're still rounding out the roster. I think though they have a really good skeleton so far, and it's something to build off of. I think whenever you get a guy like Solomon Asante, and then, you know, going off of other players, Ronaldo Damas, you know, Milan Alaska, you can build around those types of players. And Solomon Asante is certainly a player that you can build around, and then try and I wouldn't say Vegas would is going to compete the season. By far, they won't, but try and be a little bit more competitive in those games that in win the games that you should have won last season or at least drawn. So really for them, I could see them nicking this because again, as you said, Memphis always starts slow. And where do they play again? I want
They're playing at AutoZone Park.
yeah, so they're playing at AutoZone Park, right? I'm gonna say it's gonna be a 1-1 draw is
Whoa.
what I'm gonna go for. So, because I think again, with Memphis starting off slow and then Vegas really just kind of pulling the roster together at the end here, I think it's not too far of a shot to say that both teams are gonna not start slow. I think I'll give them both a goal, as I said, but I think it could be a match lacking a bit of offense due to each team's, you know, Memphis starting
Situation.
slow and then Vegas's situation coming to the start of the season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people will put Las Vegas in the same boat as Rhode Island, and it's like, you know, they're both building a roster here. But the difference I see for Rhode Island is they had a clear philosophy going into the season. They already had Smith in terms of who they had in last season. They had him hired last season, so they knew the direction that they wanted to take the team. They had ownership in place. Las Vegas change ownership and they go for a new direction. And this roster really goes with that. And they're building it about a month or two out from the season, as opposed to Rhode Island, who had players signed already coming into the end of last year and starting this year way before Las Vegas. So I wouldn't put them necessarily in that same little like category. I think Las Vegas are definitely more far off in terms of competing, like you said. So I'm going to kind of disregard how Memphis start last year because I think under a returning coach, they will be better off the front foot. I'm gonna say a 2-0 win for Memphis. That I feel like that might be a bit safe, but throughout the quality that they've brought in, I mean, they went like for like replacing Drew Romig with Tyler Derrick. I really like that. Derrick's been with RGV for the longest time. So that change of scenery could also help him become a top goalkeeper in the league. They also bring in Noe Mesa, who we've been very high on, coming from Union Omaha. And you look at Las Vegas's roster again, attacking wise, they do have depth up there. They've signed a lot of attacking players, a lot of attacking midfield players, but defensively, they still need to sign more. I know that they're going to sign more heading up to the first game of the season, but I just don't think it's quite going to be enough for opening day, at least. Once this roster gets more time together and more games in them, obviously it's going to look better because this is the most competently put together Las Vegas roster I think we've seen in a long time. And that's also going back to the days when they were aligned with LAFC and we're getting players like Cal Jennings on loan and Danny Chrysostomo who helped them out as well. So I'm going to say 2-0 for Memphis here. I don't think Las Vegas at this point in the first game have what it takes to get a point.
I think if they do get a point, that defense for them is going to play a big role, I think, because I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, Vegas are going to be able to score when you have Solomon Asante up top, right?
Right.
So that back line and how it's going to come together early in the season, that's going to be the biggest factor for me. And I think preseason they played a preseason match already, I believe.
They did against Orange County.
Yeah, in how that has, kind of come together potentially in that preseason match, that could be important as well. Building that chemistry, right, that you need to get as a back line, to prevent the ball from going into the back of your net. So, I mean, I also wouldn't be surprised if Memphis nick it, but who I guess, because I sometimes go for my even more unpopular opinions, you could say.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game.
But
Probably
also,
more interesting
but
game.
you know, also I've shit on Las Vegas a lot. So I think maybe they're fans who, whether they're listening to the podcast or not, or the Vegas admin from Twitter. I'm not like backing them a win, of course, but I think a draw away at Ozone Park is going to be a good result if they do pull it out.
That would probably be the best result that they could hope for. I don't think they go in and win. That would be probably the most surprising thing I think we could see. So see how that game plays out. We're heading now out west, New Mexico United, who I think have been a little bit underrated throughout this offseason in terms of the moves that they've made and how they have really moved. We've said this a lot, at least recently, that New Mexico United are moving into a new era, it seems. They've brought in a lot of youth, but they've also brought in a lot of experienced players who are in that 26 to 28-year-old range who can be the new old guard for this team, you know? Marco Micheletto comes in and feels like captain material already. Same with Abu Dinlatty. These are focal points of a team who is moving on and moving in a new direction. But then you have players like Chris Shakes in goal, who coming out of Penn State, probably, if he sticks around, could take that number one spot off of Tim Backus. Players like Chris Gloucester, who will do well at the back end, Hosu Landry, who they recently picked up from Loudoun United. And a lot of Loudoun United fans are pretty upset about that sale to New Mexico United, a league rival, of course. So it feels like they're hitting on everything right, whereas Pittsburgh finally went out and got a Albert Dick replacement in Keziah Sterling. It's not like for like. Albert Dick is hard to replace, and Keziah Sterling has only plied his trade professionally in the US and USL League One. While that does usually translate, at least for a player of Sterling's stature and his ability, that he will be able to perform here, it's still an unknown. This Pittsburgh roster is not even close to the roster it was last year. So it feels like New Mexico United do have a little bit of an upper hand here, but Pittsburgh are remarkably always a hard team to play, no matter what their roster looks like. So for me, I say a two-all draw here. The lab is a hard place to go, but if there's one team that can get a result here against a New Mexico team who is fired up for a new season, I do think it would be Pittsburgh.
Yeah, most definitely. I think you kind of you hit on New Mexico United and how they've been underrated. I think in terms of how their offseason has gone compared to ours, they've done much better, and yet I still put us above them, and that's only because I have a bias, right? But yeah, they definitely have been very underrated this offseason, and they're a team to look out for, especially because they're bringing back Quill for his second season. Which is also big. I think you're gonna need a manager at some point to come in for his second season, kind of set have a set roster in a way that he has the skeleton and he has his system and his philosophies embedded within that skeleton, and then he can kind of build around it. I think that's really important. But yeah, as Pittsburgh is just
They
so
feel like a wild card this year.
They're a wild card, but they also frustrate me, I think, at the same time, because it's like you just got the first seed in the Eastern Conference. And then it feels like a betrayal, honestly, where they just like they go out and they say, well, no, we'll let go of all these three guys, you know, the our three most important, one of our three most important players, right? So I think in this, the traveling cross country, relatively speaking, it's not too much of a task, I think, for them, because they still have good players, they still have experienced, you know, an experienced roster, and Bob Lilly is a really good manager. So I'm going to agree with you, actually, but I'm going to go for a 1-1 as well.
Another 1-1. You'll have to
Yeah,
see it.
another 1-1.
I think Pittsburgh's philosophy is that they went out and they found players that they thought and still think can replace all of the standout talent that they lost this offseason in a couple years. Pierre Kaye and Sean Suber as center backs, it feels like will go in terms of the direction of replacing Joe Farrell and Arturo Ordóñez. Pierre Kaye spent time with New England Revolution too, so this is a big jump, I would say, in terms of him having to prove himself here. And a lot of the players that Pittsburgh have brought in, of course, we've hit on time and time again, fresh out of college. So this is, while it's not, like their last chance, they're going to get chances in this league if they're going straight to Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh see something in this them. But this is their first game. This is their time to shine because some of these players are the main depth for Pittsburgh and they will at least be coming off of the bench. We're going to see Cornato Forbes, Dana Griffin, Robbie Mertz, all of the guys that we are so often that we so often see that we're so usual with. They're going to start. Edward Kiz is going to start. But now they're having to rely on more inexperienced, more wild card players coming off of the bench and having to make up whatever the players, the starting 11, can't do in terms of what they used to have, which was actual league proven depth. So it feels like they are getting really close. To they're testing the boundaries of what they can get away with and still make the playoffs, it feels like. And I don't doubt that they won't make the playoffs. I put them in eighth. I think that they'll still make the playoffs. Knowing them, they'll finish probably second or third or even first, to be completely honest. I mean, that's just how it's going to go. But I think talent-wise, and how we know Pittsburgh want to play, I see this as a major step back. And I don't think that this route of signing players will turn over into as much success as Pittsburgh think it will.
Yeah, that's, I mean, hit the nail on the head there. Just the fact that they have the younger players coming in, it's whether they have the same potential that, you know, the players that they're replacing had, they're still young players and they're still inexperienced and they don't know the USL. They don't know the league and how tough it's going to be. No matter how tough Bob Lilley is going to be on them, of course. So, again, I still think they can make the playoffs, and I think they will actually, because that's what I predicted, in, you know, my predictions on Instagram. But it's like, it's Bob Lilly. The guy is just gonna find a way. It's kind of like he's honestly he's the Thanos of the USL, right? It is inevitable, right? It's just. Yeah, he's that good as a manager. And again, as we kind of mentioned, maybe this is his last season. We don't know. He hasn't said anything, I don't think, about it being his last season. And by all means, he very well could continue going for another 2 years, for all we know,
Good.
or 5 years.
That's one of the things that Lily is pretty good with. He's pretty tight-lipped and like inconspicuous about his future. So I think that adds a lot to Pittsburgh's notoriety of being a great team. It's that, there's not a lot of turmoil in the Pittsburgh camp ever. We see across the league that players want out or coaches are unhappy, and that always provides a mess in terms of what's on the field, or at least it usually does. Pittsburgh haven't had any problems in terms of that. So I think that translates into on the field success as well as that is just a very top to bottom, well-run club. And it feels like this year they're experimenting and seeing, like I said, what they can get away with. So this is a very intriguing game. One game though that I think is pretty straightforward is San Antonio Loudoun. I don't want to laugh about it because Loudoun United have restructured their roster in a way that I think a lot of teams will be envious of. They've done a lot of work in reworking their philosophy. They brought in players like Florian Vallot and Cristiano Francois, who are league staples. And for Loudoun to progress as a club, you need league staples. You can't always rely on youngsters coming out of college or out of MLS academies or loans from MLS. You need to go out there and you need to pick up players who have been around this league for at least a couple seasons if you want to succeed. They do that, but they do follow in the same footsteps of getting players like Jacob Erlandson, Keegan Hughes, players who are, coming out of MLS stints or on loan from MLS clubs. So if it doesn't feel like the same old for Atlanta United, they are making progress in terms of being an independent team. But going to Toyota, going to San Antonio, who have reworked their roster, I think about as good as you could expect for San Antonio to do. They bring in Juan Agudelo. They recently brought in Hugo Mbong from Toronto, who is absolutely fantastic. They do lose Connor Maloney to retirement, so that is a big hole that they have to fill. But this San Antonio roster, it speaks for itself. They speak for themselves. I think their tactical ability far outmatches what Loudoun United will be able to do on the field. And I wouldn't be surprised if, we've built up Loudoun United so much this offseason, and then San Antonio go out and win like 6-1, 6-2.
Yeah, so with this, I think if it was at Segra, because I feel like, I don't know, San Antonio kind of, I wouldn't say struggle on the road, but they are certainly not the same team they are at home compared to on the road. At times they can look a little bit shaky on the road. But since it is at Toyota Field, I think it is going to be a 3-0 win for San Antonio. I just find it tough for Loudoun going away to Toyota, which is a very hostile environment. It's gonna be tough. Maybe Zach Ryan scores one, but I just, you know. So yeah, 3-0, but I will say this. I'm a little concerned for San Antonio in a sense that they don't have that Rita Zuhir. They don't have that Samuel Adeniran. They don't Is Santiago Patino back?
I believe so.
Okay, well,
He
I
has a
mean,
question
if
that
he
I've
is,
had as
but then
well.
and then again, he wasn't the same player, right, that he was compared to, I mean, maybe I just am forgetting his stats, but I don't know, it just feels like we didn't hear a whole lot from him or as much from him compared to the title winning season, if that makes sense. So really for San Antonio, that's my only concern. And that's why I predicted them to finish fifth, is like they don't have that big difference maker, the guy that can pop up and take those half chances and turn them into goals. So that's just my only concern. They're still going to be a good team, and I've kind of said it before as well, but I don't think I've said it on the podcast yet. It doesn't matter where you finish realistically at the end. It just matters as long as you finish in the playoff standings, because anything could happen in the playoffs, right?
We've seen that so many
So
times.
To me, it doesn't matter. I just care about getting the playoff field correct, to be honest. To me, I don't really care where I predict the team standings wise and then where they finish, because I don't really find home field advantage to be a big thing. Only early on in the season, which is the case here. So there you go.
And then say one of the issues that I constantly go to for teams is roster turnover. San Antonio have not returned much of their roster at all. In fact, that
They rely so much on that loan market, don't they?
they do. They to be fair to them, they've only brought in two loans this offseason, Mbong and Kevon Lambert. But they are only returning about 6 to 7 players. They've brought in nearly double that. That could be an issue, but for San Antonio, who are still under the leadership that they've been under for so long. And then you look at players like Mbong, who are going to complement Juan Agudelo and Luis Seligniak so well up top. Pablo Sisniega is a question mark for me in replacing Jordan Farr. But then you have Kendall Burks, Luke Hackinson, all great players. Kendall McIntosh as well. This might be one of the top goalkeeping cores in the league. You can quote me on that. I am not too worried about their turnover as I would be for other teams. Loudoun United, on the other hand, return quite a bit of their roster, go out and also get players like Juuse Gundrick and Tommy McCabe, as well as some other, casual, usual youth signings that we expect from them. So there is this question of, will San Antonio be ready with all these new signings? I think they will. I don't think it's quite going to be the 6-2 that I alluded to, but I do think that San Antonio take this pretty comfortably in terms of like a 4-1, 4-0 win. I think San Antonio are well prepped for another great year. And Loudoun United, for as much as they've done, need more time to grow into what they want to be, which they have set out a pretty clear path, which is like it's the first step. So I applaud them for that. And I think in a couple seasons' time, we could see them being one of the top teams in the USL.
Yeah, and especially if they get that attendance up, right? Which they've been doing better of recently. So yeah, I think it's I'm just glad the USL is back, man. That's it. But really, it's gonna be an interesting one, this one, because of the fact that Loudoun United have some players coming back. They made some really good additions in Florian Vilo. It's just Alan Marcina is that good of a manager
In a
to
tactician.
where in a tactician that this is going to be just a really tough game for Loudoun, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of tough games, we're going to Phoenix Birmingham. Doesn't get much harder of an opening day than it does for Birmingham, who travel to the reigning USL Championship champions. Phoenix have been going through, it feels like, another retooling. They lose one of their biggest contributors to their success last year in Danny Trejo. That cannot be looked over. But they bring back a lot of players. One player that I'm looking at in particular, who it feels like flew under the radar last year, but I saw him getting a lot of praise, is Panos Armanakis, who joined midseason from Loudoun United. Then they add players. First of all, they add players all over the board, which is fantastic. Phoenix, it feels like, took an actual methodical approach, one of the best approaches, and hit on like every aspect. You look at Dorotiotto, who joins Italian youth international, who joins from Juve next. Juan Azucar, Edgardo Rito. Remy Cabral is one of the more interesting punts on a player that I've seen. I'm not the highest on him, but I wonder, in this style of play, how Phoenix like to move forward, how they just attack in general, if he'll fit in that. And then you have, of course, Lawrence Weick, who has been around the league for so long, spent some time with Nashville. Birmingham, on the other hand, didn't do too much this offseason. They made a couple key signings, but they're really relying on players like Enzo Martinez, Tyler Pascher to carry them forward, players that they've had for quite some time now. I don't necessarily know how that's going to work out for them, especially because they had a bit of a down year last year. At least for me, they did, as opposed to some of the seasons where they were really building after 2019, I would say. So going to Phoenix to start another year where you lose your assistant coach, you didn't have the best season, you still made the playoffs. You dropped the Tampa Bay Rowdies in the playoffs as well. It doesn't really spell disaster for me, but I think Birmingham will be a bit hard done here, and it could be a pretty easy Phoenix win. But I don't want to count Birmingham out. I'll say a 2-1 score line, but I think Phoenix really dominate most of the game, possession wise and just quality wise.
Yeah, I agree. I actually for this one I did have a 2-1 win as well. So now we're just copying each other, I guess. But I think Birmingham are in a little bit of a similar situation to us, Monterey Bay FC, where they had a total net negative of players going out, and also in terms of quality as well, because we only had one less player go out than we brought in. But in terms of the players that went out, which is Sam Gleadell, which is Christian Valeski, which is et cetera, I mean, we'll get onto that in a second, of course, or in the next segment. You know, for Birmingham, they lost Juan Agudelo, they lost Nico Brett, they lost Enner Nesiri, which I think is the most important loss, by the way. He is one of the best center midfielders, I think, in the USL. Gabriel Alves at fullback, you know, Mateo Bunbury, Tyler Freeman, which didn't really pan out with him, Colin Smith. It just feels like Birmingham didn't really do enough and returned basically the same roster without some of the key contributors of that roster from last year. So in turn, I just really don't see it for them. You know what? I'm actually gonna go 2-0 on this. I'm gonna switch it. I'm gonna go 2-0 because maybe it's a bit harsh, but going away to the champions who are coming off a high, I just don't see it for this match for Birmingham. I think they can definitely go on stretches and they can show flashes because they do have quality up top, but and then quality at the back as well. It's just, can they sustain it? And that's been the real key over the last few seasons for them in general. And I just don't think it's possible.
Yeah, and for Birmingham, there's three players that I'm really interested to see how they do starting off the season. Toure is their new number nine, their starting number nine, it looks like, over Stefano Pino, which is a big shout. Unproven in the league, of course, his first year in the USL Championship. That would be interesting to see. Across the preseason games, it looks like he was settling in pretty well, but you know, still finding his footing, doing a couple things, not necessarily too progressive, but does look like he could work out from the start. AJ Patterson coming across from the Charleston Battery, and then Miguel Perez on loan. Perez seems like a real up-and-comer intern. We already know his talent, but for me, it's will he get the start on opening day? If he does, I think Birmingham do find another dimension going forward. But if it does pan out to be Martinez and Corcoran, like predicted, I think Birmingham might be a bit more conservative in their approach. And that might be what causes them to not necessarily be in this game. But I think Perez does unlock a bit more from that front line. And Toure is the real wild card there. But Prosper Kassim and Tyler Pasher, Diba Nwegbo, we know what they can do. They were on fire, especially during those first month or two last season. They were lighting the league up in terms of just beautiful play, goals, assists everywhere. It felt like that's all we saw from them. But if Birmingham take, of course, a defensive approach going to Phoenix, that's going to subdue the attack, and that is going to leave Birmingham out to dry in the desert for Phoenix to just take control of the game. So I think that little hitch there could be the difference between a Birmingham team who are in the game this weekend, as opposed to, you know, Phoenix leave them in the dust and it's 2-0 in the opening 35 minutes and Phoenix are on cruise control for the rest of the game.
Yeah. I think it's like if you're gonna rely on, you know, that unproven forward in Toure and then also Pino, which he's shown he can score, but he certainly hasn't been the same in terms of his production. I struggle to find where the goals are going to come from other than, you know, Enzo Martinez and Tyler Pasher. That was something that you got in Nico Brett. That was something that you got in Juan Agudelo. So I think goals could be a struggle outside of those two players. And I think one player that's going to play a big role in that is Preston Tawuadu Taka. He's going to have a big season if they want a shout at the playoffs. Well, I think they'll be within the playoffs, but you know, in terms of making the playoffs, he has to have a really big season.
He does. And before we head to our break, I will say that it feels like Birmingham have put themselves into a position that not a lot of teams want to be in, and it's that every player that they have signed needs to hit in order for them to have success. Everybody who is already there needs to hit for them to have success. You look at players or teams that have built well. Like North Carolina doesn't necessarily need Oleks Anderson or Rafa Mantzingen to hit in order for this to be a good year because they have brought in so much quality depth. They already have the leadership there. They already know what they want. They don't need every single player on that roster to hit for it to be a good season. Birmingham do. Tyler Pasher has an off game. It's probably going to be a difficult game going forward, you know? Crenali and Patterson don't necessarily, well, I guess for the defense, if any player has an off day, then it's going to be not super fun to deal with. But every player on this Birmingham team needs to go out, give 110%, and get damn near everything right if they do want to get I would say home playoff spot. I think Birmingham's floor isn't necessarily like down in 10th or 11th in the Eastern Conference, but if players don't show up and this roster looks to be as about as thin as it is, then you know if we're struggling coming summertime, I wouldn't be surprised if Birmingham are around 8th or 9th place.
Yeah, that's another huge key there. I think they certainly have one of the more thinner rosters
Yeah.
in the USL Championship, which is saying something because we're going into this season having 21 as well. And I think they're about at that number. And I've been saying that 21 for us is a little
A
too
little low.
small, little too thin. So.
Yeah. I would say around like 23, 24 players would be like a good roster limit for any team, but you know, like I said, Birmingham need all these players to hit. So we'll see how that goes for them, but we're gonna take a quick break before we head back and hit on the last three games. We are back from our break and we're going to finish off with the three games that we were not able to get to. We were going to hit on some transfers, but going through, it seems like not much has been done the past week or so that I haven't already gotten to in terms of the socials or anything. So we really have no transfers to talk about, which means we are in full game mode for this episode. So next up, of course, Oakland Indy. This is a game that happened last season. Oakland ran out 3-0 winners in Indianapolis, of course. I don't think we get anywhere near close to that, purely because Indy have retooled, I think, very well this year and have actually got a dynamic look to them. Augie Williams is, of course, the main man you look at when you see Indian 11's new and improved roster. But you can't look over players like Tyler Gibson, who is one of the best defensive midfielders and one of the best progressive defensive midfielders that the USL Championship has ever seen. Aiden Stanley is a fantastic fullback. And then Hunter Salty in goal to complement Yannick Udde, I think, is one of the best moves that Indy could have made. Udde had his hiccups last year, and Hunter Salty, while still being very young, is kind of in the same boat. Maybe two goalkeepers who can bounce off of each other and improve each other and make this a top 10 goalkeeping core in the league. I mean, Hunter Salty is still a ways off being a starting goalkeeper, I would say, but he's promising. And you look at what Indy have lost, I wouldn't say that there's a lot lost there in terms of contribution. They bring back a lot, especially the players that they spent big on. Indy had one of the biggest off seasons heading into 2023. They completely reworked that midfield. They spent a lot of money to get in Sebastian Guendouzi from the Tampa Bay Rowdies as well, and they just completely reworked that back line. And while it sh showed that they were kind of transitioning early doors last season, they really picked it up towards the end, made the playoffs in the end, and now they have, I would say full force heading to the West Coast to Oakland, who are in the same boat where they don't turn over, they return most of their roster, I should say. They go out, fill key needs of players who left, pretty much like for like replacements across the board. And it feels like we're looking at the same Oakland Roots roster as last year, just with a couple of different names, but we know they're going to play the same way. We know that the output on the field is going to be the same, or is going to be pretty close to the same. But that also brings me to the point where Oakland is a very difficult place to go and play. There's something about it, but Oakland get the job done, whether it's a couple draws in a row, but Oakland simply just do not lose at home very often. So as much as I'd like to say that Indy walk in and do take down Oakland, a little bit of revenge for Oakland doing the same thing last year, I do think Oakland take a 1-0 win here because Indy, I think, will go through a bit of that same stage as last year, but I think they'll recover from it quicker and will be able to build more of a proper season. But Oakland at home, you just don't bet against that. And for me, they have made smart moves. The goal scoring is still a bit of a question mark for me, as it has always been for Oakland. They don't have Carlson, the penalty merchant, to save them. But, teams get lucky. Bounces go the right way. I think Oakland find a goal here, and it could be a magnificent start if they do get the job done against Indy.
Think Oakland is just a really just an interesting team. They always fascinate me. I think because they have such great fans, and last season they didn't really get the results they wanted compared to other seasons. But it feels weird in saying that because there was a moment in time where they were top of the Western Conference. About, I don't know, I think it was midway through the season almost, go or at least in the summer months. I think it may have been after the game they played against us at Cardinale. It's like they have talent there on that roster, but they have been so streaky at times, almost like us. Where they have a really good stretch of form, and then they have such a poor stretch of form, and it's just kind of bound to happen with teams that are their fringe contenders. But I think with Oakland, they very well potentially could kind of string together those matches where it's just a little bit longer of a good stretch of form compared to a bad stretch of form. And that ultimately could be the difference in terms of whether you're making the playoffs or not, right? That was certainly the difference last season. And then the difference the seasons they made the playoffs was that they got the job done when they needed to. They didn't last season. So I think for Indy, it's just kind of like a you just kind of know what they're capable of. But then adding Augie Williams is just, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a death sentence to goals, but it feels like it's a death sentence to goals, right? They're gonna be so good, I think, at putting that ball in the back of the net. And then you have, as you kind of mentioned, that defense, that back line, which is going to be fairly decent, and Yannick Odell is going to be a good keeper. It's also going to be Danny Barbier's return to Oakland as well after leaving Oakland in the offseason. So really for this, I see it as potentially an opportunity for Indy. And I know Oakland is a tough place to go, in which I will go for an Oakland 2-1 win. So I think Oakland is going to pull it out in the end because I kind of trust the fact that it's their home opener. They want to make up for what happened at the end of last season, I think, especially with the fact that bringing back a lot of their key pieces. So for them, it's going to be a golden opportunity, on opening night.
Absolutely. And one thing before we move on for me is that if Indy can get into their mojo and can pull apart that Oakland defense, if Oakland's defense gets pulled apart, which it very rarely does, then the floodgates are open. Oakland are a very difficult team or a very or a much easier team to play against once they get a little bit frustrated at the back line and things start to open up. Because once they lose that mental capacity to hold their line, everything opens up in Oakland. So if Indy can come out flying and get a goal or two in the opening 20 minutes, then I think it could be a bit of a bloodbath because you do have a pretty new back line if Rasmussen and Camden Riley do start, two new center backs that are being thrown into the Oakland back line. Rasmussen, of course, very used to a more attacking minded way of playing in Portland. And same with Camden Riley, not necessarily used to how Oakland play, having come over from the San Diego Loyal. Will an offseason be enough to translate into a more conservative style of defensive play? Who knows? So it's a really a question of can Indy get that attack going and can they get service from that midfield that we're so high on? Jack Blake, Aiden Quinn. And can this Oakland defense stay in the game with two new pieces at the back at home? I am more counting on Rasmussen and Riley playing well and getting used to it off the bat for Oakland being able to get a 1-0 win. I think Augie Williams coming into a more, I mean, Indy can score goals. We saw that last year. They are capable, but Williams is more used to that free-flowing foot on the gas all the time of Charleston, which is why they scored so much and then conceded so much. But Indy take a more methodical approach. They like to play with the ball. They like to move forward as a unit. And will that complement Augie Williams throughout his first couple of games? I don't think so. I think we'll have to get used to that before we start to see him bagging those 15 to 20 goals that we saw the past couple of seasons for Charleston.
Yeah, and I'll say really quickly is like I think this is the situation of where one team is kind of adjusting almost as I kind of mentioned, Augie Williams adjusting to the new system. And in turn, it may be the fact that Indy are just shaking off a little bit of rust. And that could I think that's just going to be the case in this one. In turn, I just think they're so good at goal scoring is why I kind of gave them a goal. But again, it's just the fact that Oakland are returning most of their roster. It's pretty well gelled already, despite the fact that Camden Riley and Drew Rasmussen, which I believe they're fullbacks, actually, if I'm not
They
correct.
are fullback. Yeah. Looks like more of a center back approach for them.
Right. It's like I think they'll fit in a little bit better, than compared to like an Augie Williams, which fitting into attack is much harder than fitting into a defense at times, I think.
Absolutely. Ooh. Sacramento, Orange County. This is a Cali classic to start off the season. This is pure USL football. 10 p.m. Sacramento, Orange County. This is going to be a one goal game. I mean, this has one goal game written all over it. I feel like I can't count how many times, we go into these California v California club games and it's built up to be this absolute like spectacle of a game and we get a goal or we get a nil nil draw. I feel that same way here because I think California clubs specifically look at the game a bit differently than the rest of the league. And then when they play each other, that all just clashes and we get a beautiful game tactically, but we just get that one goal to really one up that, this team is better than the other team. I think we'll see that here for Sacramento coming off of a first place in the Western Conference, Orange County coming off of a huge year. After major disappointment after 2021, it looks like they are back on their high horse in being a top team in the USL, which is fantastic. There is one key here, though, and it's that Sacramento Republic went out and I think made one of the biggest signings in the offseason, which is Trevor Amon to now lead their front line with Russell Cicerone and Roro Lopez. I mean, are you kidding me? One of the best attacks in the league. I won't say this echoes Haji Berry, Michy Ngelina, and Elvis Amo that we saw, but it's getting damn near close. Russell Cicerone as a penetrating forward is fantastic. Amon in the box off of those one-time finishes and in the air. And then Lopez, an absolutely beautiful creator. It's all there for Sacramento to be a fantastic team going forward. They bring back damn near their whole back line in Jacker and Vietor. Shane Wheat, absolutely fantastic. Connor Donovan, absolutely fantastic. And the Danny Vitiello. What more can you say about one of the top goalkeepers in the USL Championship? When we look at Orange County, though, they kind of fit along the same ways. Cam Dunbar, Ethan Zubak, and Christian Sorto, brand new front line. Zubak and Dunbar are mainly strikers. Sorto coming over from Miami FC. Have to see how that goes. But again, Orange County only make a few signings, but it feels like they're starting from a bit of a lesser place than Sacramento, who we already know to be like the absolute best of the best of the USL. So for me, I think Sacramento get that goal in this game and Sacramento take a 1-0 win because I think their roster and what we know that they can do is just too much for Orange County on opening day.
I was actually thinking the exact same thing. I because just like, also Sacramento is a tough place to go as always, and I think, kind of touching on one person that I think he left out, that is I think one of the most underrated signings in the league, Jonathan Ricketts. Jonathan Ricketts signing for Sacramento not only gives them depth at that back line, but he very well was one of the most underrated players in terms of defenders on RGV. And it's just another product of RGV, I think. They are so good at churning out talent. It's absolutely insane. Of course, that won't be happening anymore, unfortunately. But I think you look at that attack, as you kind of mentioned, for Sacramento. I think it does kind of rival that Colorado attack, but it's two different styles in a sense that, like, Colorado was a little bit more always go, 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 and it was more fluid, which led to them conceding a little bit more goals at times, similar to how Charleston were. But Sacramento are way more methodical with it, and they are going to break you down. They're going to find that cross in, they're going to find that ball in behind. They are a team that have shown time and time again that they know how to get it done. And I think that's going to be the difference. And it's going to be a cagey game, I think, at times. Both sides are going to be feeling each other out a little bit. But that's why, as I kind of mentioned, they know how to get it done. And that's why they're going to nick it in the end, I think. 1-0.
Absolutely. Sacramento, I feel like, are the like standard team. Like they're gonna get 55 goals this year. They're not gonna do anything too crazy, but they're gonna concede like 20. They're going to be the best of the best in each category.
They're gonna be what Chelsea used to be, right? It's like they're not gonna concede a lot. They're probably the least in the league, and they're probably gonna not score a whole lot by other team standards, of course. But by all means, they will sit back and they will defend their asses off.
Yeah, they will dominate possession. They'll get in your head. They will own you on the field. Like, this is a 3-4 loss, Sacramento Republic team. Orange County, you look at the roster, you know that they're capable. They're going to be in and around that third or fourth spot. But Sacramento on their day, just too damn good. And that leaves us with our last game, El Paso, Monterey Bay on Wednesday night. We are going to count this as part of Match week one, which funnily enough, we went through four team or six teams missing out on the Saturday games. El Paso and Monterey Bay, or no, El Paso do play on Saturday. Goodness. But Monterey Bay don't play until Wednesday. And then a couple other handful of teams don't play in the first weekend at all. So, and of course, Louisville have a friendly game on Saturday for missing out on the first week. So I have to keep touch on that. But El Paso, Monterey Bay. Noah, why don't you take it away first from a Monterey Bay perspective, heading to El Paso?
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a tough match because I really do rate El Paso. I like what they've done. They've improved quite a lot I think, and under their second season with Brian Clairhout, I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. I really do. Adding players like Amando Moreno and bringing in guys like Jamali Waite as your goalkeeper, that is really insane that they have been able to do that. And they've really built on that last season. But you know what you're going to get in Petar Petrovic, Eric Calvillo, Liam Rose, funny enough, former Monterrey Bay FC man Arun Basilovic rejoining them, which I was kind of surprised to see because he is a little bit up there in age and he still can be a quality player at times. Didn't really find his footing with us necessarily, but you know what you're going to get at Noah Dahlemeyer as well, and of course, Yuma. But then they bring in guys like Balakanyode, as I mentioned, Amano Moreno, Joaquin Rivas, Justin Dillon, which is a really great signing. And then I think one of the more underrated ones as well, Tomimo Shibane, up top as well. So I think this is going to be a super, super tough game for us. I'm going to be happy if we come out of it with a draw, honestly. If we can get a point from this match, that would be incredible, honestly, because Southwest University Park, just such a tough place to go. We lost 5-0, I think it was the first time that we went there, which that was the inaugural season, of course. But then we did actually go in and we beat El Paso 2-1 last season. It was probably our biggest win of the season, given where we were in the standings compared to them, right? Of course, we didn't make the playoffs in the end. But I think I'm going to go for a 1-1. I'm just, that's just a hopeful thing. But realistically, I am going to say,
3-0, Monterey Bay win.
realistically, I'm going to say, 2-1. I'm going to give us a goal, but I'm going to say 2-1 El Paso realistically, but obviously my heart says 1-1 and I'll take a draw 100%.
Man, well, all this talk is just rearing me up. I'm so excited for this weekend, man. It's unbelievable. I can't wait anymore. I was talking off camera. I've been pretty open of my support for the Columbus Crew. Of course, they are my hometown team, but I have been, as was last season, USL Championship excitement just continues to go above my excitement for any MLS season, especially this year because MLS continues to fucking dog walk the Open Cup.
Yeah, I'm so excited that I'm doing the watch along for the El Paso Hartford game, because like, why not? USL is back and we're playing El Paso anyway, so it's better. I think it's kind of nice that I'm actually like doing something to do a watch along because we're playing
Little
that team. Like,
scouting report.
yeah, a little scouting report for the people who are going to tune in, right? Which is important. I think people should understand how El Paso are going to play, right? So yeah, but that's also just me like being, I guess, antsy in a way. Like, I'm just so excited. But best believe, the whole of Saturday is going to be USL oriented. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Little do you guys know that Noah is actually a USL insider. Right, he is a scout
I
for
am.
a massive team. He is getting all the inside knowledge. But anyway, going to El Paso, the one thing I want to say about them is that it feels like that they have been the benefactor of every team moving on from their big players who they just couldn't offer a bigger contract to or needed to make room in order to make other signings. And El Paso have capitalized on that to the fullest extent. Elijah Martin, Amanda Moreno, Joaquin Rivas, Justin Dillon, Tumi Moshabani, Jamali Waite, Lucas Stouffer, all players who are at the top of their game coming from other USL Championship clubs, either because they saw something in El Paso that they didn't see at their old club, or they just wanted to move away purely financially or idea-wise, conflict of interest, didn't see what the manager at the old club wanted, just wanted to change of scenery as well. El Paso have been put into the best position possible. And then you add two ball playing center backs like Tony Alfaro and Brandon Craig. This El Paso team is, for me, elite to an extent that not a lot of other teams can claim. Monterey Bay, on the other hand, I don't want to just move into Monterey Bay like that, but I have to. Monterey Bay have impressed me with their approach to transfers, I have to say. It's not often that you see a team that has a season like last year, and you think, okay, I know I can continue to work with this talent. We just need a couple more things. They went out and addressed their goal scoring. They brought in Luther Archimed, who I do think will kind of step into his own here and can be a 10-plus goal scorer. Of course, you lose Christian Vlecky and Sam Gleadel, which Noah's been so high on. He hasn't made sure to let us forget that, but Sam Gleadel speaks for himself. He is a fantastic player, and really was like the engine of that attack for Monterey Bay for so long. And then they go out and get a young player like Tristan Traeger, who was kind of stepping into his own as well with the Charleston Battery. Now, back in his home state of California, will this be his spot where he can be at least a 3-4 year player for Monterey Bay and consistently get those goals? Frank Yallop trusts him. I trust him for that. And then another one, Carlos Guzman at the back. Looks like he'll be playing more of a center back role. I would like to see him more out wide. I think that is where he does his best work, especially bombing forward with a five back that Monterey Bay look to be playing as a wing back getting up and down that line. I think he could complement whoever plays up top in midfield perfectly if he's allowed to play there. If we do see that, I honestly don't see a reason why Monterey Bay can't go in and control a majority of this game and get at least a draw. But if it does end up being that Monterey Bay have some goal scoring issues at the beginning of the year, and El Paso, who on paper have hit it out of the park, can get it all right, then El Paso walks over this game. I'll go for the two hypotheticals here. If Monterey Bay do show out and everything works, and tactically, it seems like that they are set up for this year and aren't going to go through those phases where it's like, oh, we're scoring goals, but defensively, it's not working out. Or now, defensively, we are perfectly sound, but we can't seem to find that little inch where we can get those couple of goals. Then I think Monterey Bay come in here and get a 2-2 draw, maybe even a 2-1 win. But if it's El Paso, who, like I said, are the benefactors of teams moving on from important players, and Monterey Bay can't find what they need out of the back and going forward, then I do think El Paso takes it 2-0. But Monterey Bay and El Paso have a quick turnaround. El Paso play three times in the first week or so. They're all home games, which is going to make it difficult for them throughout the season. But Monterey Bay have a quick turnaround as well from Wednesday playing again on Saturday. So whatever the result of this game, both teams are put in a situation where luckily, this game doesn't feel as important as other teams' games who they have to wait a week afterwards to play. Whereas El Paso have the three in a row, they can really get some ground now. Monterey Bay can have a quick turnaround, bam. We didn't necessarily do what we wanted to do in El Paso, or maybe they do. And then they can go back on Saturday and kind of fix what they need to do or just continue how they started.
Yeah, and I think the one thing is, we've finished all our preseason.
Oh, sorry. For some reason I just zoned out there, but yeah, it's gonna be a very intriguing game for how we see El Paso. Yeah, unfortunately Noah's mic cut out, so this might be where we end it here. This is where we were going to end it anyway. We just had the games for today, but again, El Paso going to be a very interesting team with all these new signings, all these big name signings that we expect to do well. And Monterey Bay returning a lot. It will be, I wouldn't say this is going to be the most fun game, but I'm looking forward to every game this year. This is going to be a game of, for me, two teams more so trying to figure out the other team's issues than the other ones, because we know that both teams are coming in with a couple of things that they need to rework from last year. Will they get it done with the multitude of business that they have done? We'll see. And adding on to a midweek game, you don't really get to join in on the action of the first week. So that could add another dimension to how this game is played and how we see both teams line up. So that's going to be it for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. Unfortunately, Noah's mic wasn't working at the end there, but he will be back for the midweek episode this week. We are mightily looking forward to that. We're looking forward to all the content that we've finally been able to get announced and get out there. I can say this will be out later, but Peoria City will be back. They are the first team on the summer of USL 2. So looking forward to that. That will start in mid-March, and we're so looking forward to that. So thank you guys for listening today, and we will see you guys midweek. Thank you.